Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Well, just a few things going on this week. And, you know, the press isn't, they're not covering any of the important stuff. It's all about Bill Barr and the vote to hold him in contempt and yada, yada, yada. You know, we're going to spend like 2 minutes on that in this show because it's like yawn. but there's some pretty big deals that you may not be aware of or only peripherally aware of. And we are going to spend some time on, you know, like Venezuela and Iran and China and, you know, stuff that kind of affects whether we live or die. And I don't mean climate change because we only have, you know, let's see, according to Beto, baby, we have 10 years left. And according to the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx, we only have 11 and a half years left. So why talk about it? Anyway, we're going to be covering, this morning, we're going to talk a little bit about Trump's tax returns, and I'm going to bring up to speed on some stuff you don't know when it comes to this supposed reveal of Trump's tax returns from 86 to 95 by the New York Times and all the crap that the Democrats are saying about it. I mean, you do know, of course, that this was all reviewed by Trump himself when he was running for president, right? The same news. The same 10 years of taxes, the same billion-dollar loss. I mean, so what? And the fact that the Democrats are talking about it, either they think we're really stupid or they're really stupid. Like, they don't know anything about tax returns. So we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning. And we're going to talk about some gun control stuff that's kind of ugly. And we're going to talk about, oh, yes, Pope Francis. Good old Pope Francis. You know, I told you that he was a lefty, a lefty's lefty a long time ago, and his comments this week have reaffirmed it in spades. And, of course, we're going to finish up part four of Civilizational Jihad, Who Really Is Barack Obama? I only covered part of that last week. You'll find the rest of the information disgusting, treasonous, and scary. I'll leave it at that. And, of course, we're going to have our story, our little historical story, which has no moral, really, kind of, this morning, but you'll find it fascinating. And we're going to talk a little bit about birthright citizenship, which is kind of a big deal. And the left, gee, big surprise, they're lying through their teeth when it comes to birthright citizenship. And we're going to talk about, very briefly, some great work that Judicial Watch is doing. And Hillary Clinton, you know, she, if I were her, I'd be hiring a really good defense lawyer team. You'll see what I mean when we get to it. So let's start with our story, shall we? And yes, by the way, as a little sidelight, my mom had her 95th birthday yesterday. She is such a pistol. So happy birthday, Mom. And, you know, if I make it to 95... I hope I am half as alert and half as active as she is. She rocks. I mean, everybody's mom rocks, right? But a 95-year-old mom that rocks? Wow. So, let's get to our story. So, this is the year 1886. And there's this pharmacist guy. He's in Atlanta, Georgia. And there was a bunch of people that were coming to his store. And his name was Doc Stith, excuse me, S-T-Y-T-H, Dr. John Stith Pemberton, to be exact. And there were people that were coming to his store, and they were all complaining about the same stuff. Lack of energy, a sense of tiredness, even a touch of depression, you know, like what everybody says today. Oh, yes, and they had stomach problems, too. That was another kind of common thread in these people that were making it their way to his... Let's get back to Doc Stith and the folks coming to his dispensary. So he came up, he figured he'd better come up with a drink that he could sell to people, of course, that would take care of all these problems. So he made a drink. It had caffeine in it, you know, to kind of step up your attention, sugar to provide energy, and a touch of, guess what, cocaine. Yeah, cocaine was legal back then, and it was in wide use, although everybody seems to have forgotten that historical fact going back. And he mixed it with soda water, you know, fizzy water. Anyway, he called it Coca-Cola syrup. Coca-Cola syrup. Huh. Didn't know that, did you? Anyway, it was not a smashing success. Okay, not even close. And he sold the formula to another pharmacist, a guy by the name of Asa Candler. C-A-N-D-L-E-R. But, by the way, Candler was later a mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, just as a little side fact. Anyway, Candler took the cocaine out of the drink. And then he began to market as a recreational drink rather than, you know, some magic elixir to fix all your problems. And Candler had some success with it, but he didn't see the full potential. And he sold all the bottling rights for this drink to a couple of lawyers from Tennessee for $2. That's not a typo. That's $2. That's $2 bills. As we all know, later on, like now, Coca-Cola has become somewhat of a success. So, I guess if there is a moral to this historical story, besides being, like, shake your head, amusing, it is don't ever undersell what you think has no value. All right. Let's get started with the news, shall we? So, let's get started by the distraction of the week. You know, every week, the mainstream media and the Democrats give you a distraction. And sometimes the Rhino Republicans, too. And the distraction this past week was Nadler, who's disgusting, and Schiff, who's disgusting, and a bunch of other disgusting Democratic communists. And Nadler's committee voting to put Bill Barr, you know, they just keep poking this bear. I mean, they're so going to regret this, in contempt. Now, what's amazing about this contempt vote is that they're putting him in contempt for not providing to them the Mueller report. The problem with this is that he has provided them the Mueller report, like 2 weeks ago, give or take. And it's been sitting in a room, literally with 97 plus or minus percent of the first 200 pages collusion, and 99% of the second 200 pages, the kind of the fairy tale that Mueller wrote on obstruction of justice. Actually, Mueller didn't write it. Wiseman, you know, his scumbag, dirty cop apprentice who got knocked down by the Supreme Court 3 times, and you know the story of him. The bottom line of all this is that they put him in contempt for not providing a report that he provided 2 weeks ago, basically 98% unredacted. By the way, on my last show, I reported to you that although that report has been sitting in a secured room for viewing by any and all members of Congress that wish to, as of my last show a week ago, 5 folks had read the report. They were all Republicans. Might be 3 folks, in fact. They were all Republicans. Not a single Democrat had read the report. Let me give you the update on that. As of this show, 14 folks in the Senate and the House of Representatives have read the report. You will probably not be surprised to learn that all 14 are Republicans. Not a single Democrat, including Nadler, and all the people on his committee who voted to hold Barr in contempt for not producing the report, has been down to read the report. Go figure. All right. So, it is quite obvious, besides, you know, poking the bear and poking Trump and doing whatever they want to do for their political grandstanding, it's quite obvious that what they're really doing is they're trying to undermine the credibility of what's coming. Like a whole bunch of indictments And the Horowitz AG report here in the next month or so, I mean, he's slower than molasses. I'm not sure I really trust him either. This is all folks trying to distract everybody with the glittering coin to the side while the locomotive comes down on them. And they know the locomotive is coming. It's one of the reasons they're trying to soften up Barr. Wrong guy. Wrong guy. They keep poking this bear, and this bear is going to tear them apart. You wait and see. It is going to be ugly. There is there was an article in the New York Times this week. Let's go to the next subject. Trump's taxes. And the New York Times breathlessly released, illegally, Trump's tax returns, including three actual pages, which is a felony. Who knows if anything will ever happen. And what the tax return showed was that from 86 to 95, Donald Trump lost $1 billion, $1.1 billion, who cares, with those numbers. And that he was in serious financial trouble, and, you know, several of his New Jersey casinos went down, and there was another outfit that he had that went down, whatever it was. And, you know, the entire mainstream media picks up on this, and they talk about, you know, why he shouldn't be president, because he lost $1 billion, he's the world's worst businessman, he's this and that, and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the fact of the matter, I don't know, they must think that we are really stupid, or that maybe we all don't take Prevagen, so we have no short-term memories left, or any memories left. First of all, Donald Trump, when he was running for president, talked very candidly about the fact he lost his butt in those 10 years. And he made it, and correctly so, he made it about his comeback. Because, you know, in the end, it's not falling off the horse, it's getting back on. And that's the kind of American dream, right? The American work ethic. Nobody has tried anything and hasn't failed. In fact, the failure is what eventually creates the success. But I'm not justifying Donald Trump's loss of $1 billion or whatever. What I'm really pointing out is, number one, Trump brought this up himself in his campaign. And number two, the New York Times in 1995, you can look it up on the web, wrote this stupendous article on Trump. And they just loved him. And you know what the article was about? It was about the fact that even though he was in huge financial trouble, even though the 1986 tax law had turned some of his deals upside down, and even though he had lost $1 billion, this New Yorker, right, New York Times, this New Yorker pulled himself up by his bootstraps and took that huge loss and turned it into a smashing success. He was bigger and better and back. That was the New York Times. The same newspaper that breathlessly released the same news they reported on in 1995, saying he was God. But this time they reported saying, this proves he shouldn't be president. And of course, the mainstream media has not brought the rest of the story to anybody's attention. Instead, they've been running off with the tax returns. So I thought you'd find those facts kind of interesting. By the way, along the lines of those tax returns, I'm not sure that any of these Democrats would even know how to read one of his tax returns. I can tell you that I know that in 1986, when the tax laws changed, let me tell you what those tax laws were. The tax laws allowed this, like, accelerated depreciation of income properties and all sorts of you know, huge write-offs for apartment buildings and office buildings and all this kind of stuff. And in 1986, with really no warning, the Congress changed all those laws, and you couldn't get all those great tax pennies. And those great tax pennies is what had driven a really go-go market in casinos and hotels and apartment buildings and all that kind of stuff for the previous 8, 9, 10 years. And a lot of investors had gotten into deals because no matter how the deal did, the taxes and the tax benefits were stupendous. Well, you know, when you change the law overnight with no warning, and you have billions and billions and billions and billions and billions We're not just talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about just about everybody in the United States who was in that line of work at that time. Bad things happen. And a lot of developers went under because of that tax law change. And a lot of other developers had severe problems. And it devalued properties dramatically. Because properties that had been appraised with the tax bennies and with the real estate values, etc., were suddenly no longer worth what they were supposed to be worth. And when they weren't worth what they were supposed to be worth, the banks were going, hey man, pay me because this property is no longer worth what we loaned to you on. Well, to make a long story short, Donald Trump turned that around and did a great job of it. And the hole that was created by this without warning overnight change in the tax law, which caught, you know, many thousands, maybe tens of thousands of developers around the United States with their pants down, he worked to his advantage. That's also something, of course, the mainstream media and the New York Times, etc., aren't reporting to you. The other thing I'll tell you about his tax returns, and I haven't seen his tax returns. I did see the New York Times article on the three pages that they illegally published. Tax returns, folks, let me put it on our level. So you have a house. And, you know, you buy the house and you write off that house over 30 years. And you write off the appliances over 5 years. I mean, I'm making this really simple. And that's called depreciation, which is a tax benefit. It comes right off your AGI, which is what your tax is computed on. Well, on your tax return, that shows as a loss, as a deduction against income. So if you had income of, I'll take a number, $100,000 a year, and your depreciation on your house at the 30 years, and your depreciation on your stoves and refrigerators and whatever at the 5 years was, I'll take a number, $10,000 for the year, you wouldn't show $100,000 of income, AGI, you'd show $90,000. You know, when a property gets devalued, a commercial property, you can take what's called a mark-to-market deduction. In other words, let's say you own an apartment building that's worth $1 million. Let's say something squirrely happens like this tax law change, and suddenly the apartment building is only worth $800,000. Depending upon whether you're cash or accrual and all sorts of other things as to your personal tax situation, you likely can take a mark-to-market write-down on that property. You know, particularly if your loan was $1 million. Now your loan is $200,000 more than the value of the property because of this external event. And that $200,000 of debt still has to be repaid. It's a real loss. And you can take that kind of on an accelerated basis, mark to market. In other words, you mark the value of the asset to market, and the difference is a deduction. And that deduction comes off your income just like that depreciation does. At the time of the 86 tax law, and actually for a few years thereafter, there was accelerated depreciation on office buildings and apartment complexes and hotels and all that kind of stuff. So you didn't just take it over 30 years. You could take it, and this is by memory, over either 10 or 15. It was accelerated. So instead of having, in the case of the house, a $10,000 deduction, you'd have a $20,000 deduction, which would come off your income. My point is this. Donald Trump, his billion-dollar loss, probably somewhere between one-third and two-thirds of it was non-cash. It's not money he lost. It was the revaluation of assets that he wrote off and the depreciation on his buildings that he took. Now, the mainstream media and the Democrats are going to tell you that, and I'm not sure the Democratic communists even, I'm not even sure they know it, to be honest with you. I mean, they're a scary bunch. These are the folks who want, you know, modern monetary theory. You can just print money whenever you need it, don't worry about anything else. And, you know, Medicare for all, and a $93 trillion Green New Deal, and et cetera, et cetera. So whether or not they can read tax returns and decipher between real losses, you know, you lose 10 bucks cash, or paper losses, you write off $10 because the value of your money went down, or your asset went down, is somewhat suspect, shall we say. And the last point I'll make on this, which I haven't heard anybody else make at all, is, you know, if you lose $1 billion, I guess you had to make $1 billion in order to lose it. So somewhere along the line, Donald Trump made enough money to lose $1 billion and survive. That tells me he's a pretty smart dude. But, you know, who am I? I'm just a hayseed in Wyoming. Let's go to our next topic. While Nadler and the Democrats have been running around doing their stuff, all of which is just, you know, unbelievable. There's been a couple of other things going on around the world, which are probably a tad more important than Donald Trump's taxes, and way more important than holding the Attorney General in contempt for not producing what he's already produced. And those would be things like China, the trade deal, and the South China Sea. Let me just bring you up to speed really quickly. So the trade talks with China have broken down. It's one of the reasons the stock market went down for a couple of days this week. And basically, Donald Trump, China thought that he'd cave, and he's not caving. And he's about to impose 25% tariffs on everything that China imports to the United States. And so far, this tariff war, which has been kind of tempered, the Chinese are getting by far the short end of the stick. Their economy has been punched. The American economy has barely been touched. So 25% tariffs on everything Chinese, yes, it might cost the average family in the United States a little bit more money. You know, if you go down to Walmart or you go down to some store and they have Chinese goods, they might be 25% higher. There's been economists that say it's going to cost the average family of four $787 a year. If you take all the folks in the United States and you figure that $500 billion has been the trade deficit and the theft from China every year for, you know, all of Barack Obama's terms, most of George Bush's terms, and you divide $500 billion by approximately 100 million people. You know, a family of four, there's 350 million people in the United States. I'm rounding numbers. A family of four, how many times does 100 million go into 500 billion? Let's do the math. Gee, I think it's 5,000. So let's look at the math. You know, once again, I'm just poor hayseed in Wyoming. So do you want to lose $5,000, literally out of your pocket because it's affecting your economy, your job, and everything else, kind of by stealth, by Chinese theft, or would you rather lose in the next year or two until it gets straightened out, $787 because the sneakers you bought cost, you know, instead of $40, they cost $60. Which would you rather do? This isn't hard. So, you know, a little short-term pain, number one, you're ahead. And number two, you're way ahead in the long term if that short-term pain brings China to the table. Now, whether or not China will come to the table is a whole nother kind of pot, shall we say. Because China is not real happy over this tariff thing. I mean, they thought Trump was going to cave. And there is currently warships, United States warships, sailing to the South China Sea, where there's been some very close encounters between Chinese and American forces over the last year, which once again have not been reported to you. Like Chinese ships trying to ram American destroyers and all sorts of stuff. So you have, shall we say, tensions escalating between China and America on a whole bunch of levels, and all driven by economics. You know, in the end, all conflict is economic. I mean, look at the Democrats. Look at their politics of division. In the end, their claims of racist is really You keep black people down so they can't make as much money as you do. Economics. They're jumping up and down saying we need Medicare for all is voodoo economics, because they're telling you you can save money on health care and get coverages. I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight too. This morning, excuse me. And I had promised to do that. This is going to be pretty interesting, by the way. I'm going to digress for a moment. This is about some of the single payer systems around the United States, around the world. Which you might kind of put in your pipe and smoke when people talk to you about this Medicare for all nonsense that the Democrat presidential candidates are jumping up and down on. Let's pick another Democratic deal. How about the Green New Deal? Okay, the argument on the Green New Deal is, yeah, we'll have to spend $93 trillion, but it's going to save us like $200 trillion. Yeah, okay. In the end, all disputes are economic. And, you know, when people start getting annoyed over money, think about what happens in your household. And pretend your household is China and America, and they're arguing over the household budget. Things can get heated. Since humans run countries, when countries are loggerheads on things economic, things can get heated. And that heat sometimes flows off into other areas, right? And you've seen it at home. Well, it's the same on the international level. So there's some interesting times coming over the next 30 days with China. Keep your eye on it. The next thing is, and by 30 days, because Trump said in 30 days, if they don't have a deal, the 25% tariffs go on. Venezuela. Gee, suddenly it's out of the news. Well, let me tell you why it's out of the news. It's out of the news because the United States, the guy they were backing down there, Guido, whatever his name was, he's not doing too well. And the 20,000 troops that Cuba has there and the 2,000 or so that Russia has there are keeping the people in check because, gee, they don't have any guns, you know. Kind of tough to have a revolution when you have to throw rocks at a tank, don't you think? Anyway, the Venezuela powder keg, folks, it ain't over. It ain't over. You're going to see some stuff happening down there over the next 30 days, too. How about Iran? Now, most of you probably haven't heard this, but we are closer to war with Iran than we ever, let me underline this, ever have been. I mean, we are on the brink of a war with the country of Iran, which will bring Israel into it and the Mideast into it and who knows what else. So Iran has geared up their nuclear program again. Nobody's supposed to know this. They never stopped it. Thanks, Barry. In addition, they have been firing their rockets. And intelligence reports, which I get, intelligence reports say that they're loading medium-range rockets on ships, ready to fire. I mean, not to transport them somewhere, but loading the firing platforms on ships. Now, you know, that could pose problems for American forces in the Mideast, and Iran has made the threat that they will attack American forces. It will certainly pose a threat for Israel. It certainly ramps up the tensions in the Mideast. And additionally, Iran has said, because Trump, let me back up. So Trump put sanctions on Iran and blew up the Iran deal. Terrific. I mean, like I'm jumping up and down, seriously, because it's a deal that should have never been entered into. But now Trump has said, you know, I kind of gave you a little breathing room because I allowed waivers for about 40% of your oil exports, which, like Russia, is the mainstay of the Iranian economy. But I'm going to shut that off. No more waivers for anybody, whether it's Europe or it doesn't matter. You can't sell any oil. Well, that will bring Iran to its knees economically. It also makes them kind of a cornered rat. And cornered rats can be dangerous until they're killed. So Iran is now rattling their sabers with all these moves and gearing up their nuclear that they never stopped. And putting the missiles on the ships and threatening to attack American forces in the Mideast. And threatening to close the Straits of Hormuz. The Straits of Hormuz, if you recall your geography, is where all the oil from a lot of the Arab states goes out to the rest of the world. In fact, 30% of the world's daily supply of oil passes through the Straits of Hormuz. And this is by memory, but I believe that the Straits, which is kind of the tip of Iran and then across the Straits, is 20 miles. It's pretty narrow. I mean, it's not like a body of water that's 500 miles wide that you're going to try and stop. Iran has threatened to close down the state, the Straits. America has dispatched a battle group with a carrier. One of the big nuclear carriers that carries like 260 planes. They've also dispatched four nuclear-armed B-52s. It's kind of a big deal. B-52s haven't been dispatched anywhere in a long time, particularly with nuclear arms. And, of course, Israel is on high alert because things have been going crazy on their border with Hamas and Hezbollah, partially funded and instigated and riled up by Iran. So there's a very interesting situation developing with the country of Iran. And do you think you can find that other than like on page 92 of a newspaper, or maybe one out of every 3,000 posts on some of the mainstream media news websites? No, you can't. But it's a big deal. A big deal. Keep your eyes on what's going on with Iran. Because that has the real, real potential to turn into something ugly in a lot of ways. And, you know, the price of oil, if they tried to close the Straits of Hormuz, even if they were unsuccessful, if they simply tried, the price of oil around the globe would probably go up 50% in a couple days. So think about your $2.80 gas going up to about $4.20, like overnight. It's kind of a good thing that we're self-sufficient in energy now, isn't it? What if we did the Green New Deal and 80 years from now this same geopolitical situation occurred? We'd be kind of screwed, wouldn't we? But, you know, I'm just a poor old hayseed in Wyoming. Let's see. Oh, and then we have North Korea. Now, this has gotten some play because, you know, the press is trying to use it to embarrass Trump because of his work on trying to get a North Korean deal done. Never mind the fact that all his predecessors didn't do squat. Never mind the fact that Bill Clinton allowed them to develop nukes anyway and paid him $4 billion to do it and told us how it was such a good deal. North Korea has fired in clusters, not just one, but a number of medium-range missiles over the past week on two different occasions. And so that situation is kind of deteriorating. There's a bunch of stuff. What I'm trying to tell you is there's a bunch of stuff going on that you really need to pay far closer attention to than whatever glitter the mainstream media is trying to distract you with at any given point in time. I mean, the Bill Barr contempt deal is not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. It's not going to make a hill of squat. And the Democrats are going to overplay their hand. And they're probably going to try and, you know, they've been rallying the Sabres, are going to throw them in jail. Well, you know, you can't just throw somebody in jail for contempt. You have to do the whole court thing. And any court's going to just throw it out. In the meantime, Barr is industriously working, angry poke bear that he is, on indicting about half the Democratic Party for their nonsense over the last 2 and 3 years. All the spying that the mainstream media told us was a lie and never occurred, and now Obama administration officials are admitting that it was spying, including Clapper. You know, our old buddy, liar Clapper, director of intelligence. Let's talk about gun control. There's been a lot of stuff that's happened on that in this last week. For whatever, you know, there used to be a lot of Democrats that said they were pro-gun. That's not really the case anymore in the new Democratic Communist Party. So we've had some bills signed this last week in Oregon, which are really anti-gun. And certain types of registrations and certain types of confiscation. I mean, it's going to be thrown out, but it was signed. And it was passed by the Looney Tunes Democratic legislature up there. In addition, New York is trying to pass, and probably will, another unconstitutional infringement on your Second Amendment rights. Remember the Constitution? Such rights shall not be infringed. And what New York is trying to do is saying that if you own a gun in the state of New York, any kind of gun, maybe includes BB guns, I don't know. How about slingshots? Or bows and arrows? Or a knife? You have to be in compliance with New York law, if this gets passed, have $1 million liability policy, insurance policy, for being a gun owner. Okay? Sure. And then we have Cory Booker, and jumping on his bandwagon, Beto O'Rourke, talking about how if he gets to be elected president, you know, the Constitution be damned, if he's going to be elected president, we're going to go to a licensing system. Every gun owner in the United States, whether you own a BB gun or you own an arsenal of AR-15s, to own them legally, you're going to have to get licensed. Which, by the way, is that's a short term for registration, which is the first step to confiscation. So Cory is jumping up and down because his campaign's doing lousy. And Beto is jumping on the bandwagon. So they would have this licensing thing, and you know, the licensing would not be automatic under Cory's plan. It would be subjective. In other words, if the government didn't want you, for whatever reason, they didn't like the color of your eyes, to have a weapon, they just say no to your license. You can't have a license, you have to turn in your guns. Or you can't have a license, you can't buy a gun. And then they're also talking about taxing and liability and all sorts of other things for gun manufacturers. Look, what's really interesting about this is that finally, the Democratic Communist Party is coming out of the closet. You know, Trump is so good at getting people out of the closet. We've now seen them for what they really are with all these alt-left wild ideas. We've seen them for what they really are with all their anti-American venom. We've seen them for what they really are with their 3 years of lies, real collusion, corruption, and illegal activity, all the way up to Barack Obama, over the whole Trump Spygate thing. And now Trump has made them come out of the closet on what their real intent for guns is. If you remember, what they always said was, oh, no, this is all about safety. We're not after your guns. Trust us. We're here to help you. Well, now, guess what's happening? Now they're coming out of the closet. They really are after your guns. You know, I did that four-part show, which was really, really, really popular with my listeners, which is called They're Coming for Your Everything. If you didn't listen to that series, you should really listen to it. It's only 2 or 3 months old. Just type in They're Coming for Your Everything in the search bar at ontherightsideradio.com and listen to those shows and read the articles that accompany those shows. You bet they're coming for your everything. And the first thing that they need to get, folks, think about this. Well, the very first thing they need to get is enough voter fraud so that they get into power, so that they can do the next thing that they want to do, which is take your guns. And doing that will allow them to do everything else they want to do. You know, there are 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights to the Constitution. And the Second Amendment is the amendment that protects all the rest. And the Democrats have figured this out. So has the United Nations. So has the rest of the world who has disarmed its citizens. Just ask Maduro down there in Venezuela. Keep your eyes on what happens with this gun stuff. For whatever reason, the Democrats seem to think that this is the time to bring this. Wow, I don't know. I don't think so. Then we have Pope Francis. You know, I have never liked Pope Francis. I thought the Pope before him, I forget his name, Pope John was it, or Pope Paul? I thought he was pretty cool, dude. You know, little old guy walking around, kind of fearless, going out in the crowds. I mean, he was famous for that. But Pope Francis, Pope Francis is a communist. He's always been on the left side of things, and this last week he gave several addresses where he said that, you know, all sovereignty of nations must cease. All borders between nations must cease. And everybody needs to be under one global government. Look it up. Google it. This is the Pope, you know. All you Catholics out there. I don't know how you impeach a Pope. Maybe you can talk to the Democrats. You might want to think about doing that. Next item we're going to talk about. Boy, we're rocking. We're rocking this morning. Birthright citizenship. So, you know, the Democrat communists, they play on your emotions. Oh, think of the poor kids, and it's not their fault they were born here, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, they forget to tell you that the only reason they're being born here is that it was premeditated by the mom. And it's costing United States taxpayers like hundreds of billions of dollars a year. And some other things you didn't know. Let me give you some. And by the way, it's one of the huge cogs in the immigration problem. Huge. Huge. Like hundreds of thousands of foreign babies being born in the United States and automatically becoming citizens. And when they're citizens, what can they do? Oh, that's right. Then we have chain migration. Each baby can have all its relatives over. The aunt and the uncle and the grandparents. Oh, how cool is that? In addition, the parents, even if illegal aliens, who had this kid in the United States, who's now a United States citizen, they are now eligible for Medicaid, food stamps, and welfare. In fact, there was a rule change, once again the press didn't cover it, by the Obama administration in 2011. And the rule change, while he was telling us about how tough he was on immigration, by the way, the rule change was, very simply, illegal aliens with U.S.-born children are exempt from deportation. Wow. Did you know also, there's like tens of thousands of babies born in the United States every year to tourists. They come here on, you know, on their vacation, quote unquote. They give birth and they return home. 2 years ago, 10,000 Chinese women came to the United States to give birth. They then go home and their kid is an American citizen. Gee. How is this going to end? I don't think too well. The hospital bills for all these births to foreign citizens, whether they're here legally, illegally, on a visa, on a vacation, or whatever, are almost always, like 99% of the time, 99.5% of the time, paid by, you guessed it, United States taxpayers. This is true, by the way, even of the birthright tourists that I was just talking about. Even though they are quite wealthy. I mean, you know, they spend all the money getting on a plane, come over here, have a nice 2-week vacation at posh hotels, and give birth to their American citizen before taking them back home. That's right. We pay the hospital. We pay all the birth things. You know, I mean, it's insane. Insane. And despite what the left tells you, which is a flat-out, bald-faced lie, and they know it, not a single European country, you know how they all think Europe's just terrific. Not a single European country grants birthright citizenship, period. And almost every other country in the world has ended it if they did it at any time. That includes, by the way, the United Kingdom, Australia, Ireland, New Zealand, India, Malta, the Dominican Republic, and a whole bunch more. A whole bunch more. Judicial Watch. Next subject. These guys rock. Send them some money. I mean, they are single-handedly, they're probably the biggest thorn in the side of the left of anybody other than Donald Trump. So Judicial Watch has now sued for all the documents that relate to the FBI's attempt to shut down Comey's attempt to shut down an investigation in the Clinton Foundation, which has now been revved up by Barr again. They've also sued for the records of the FBI meetings with a Clinton law firm. Did you know there was a bunch of meetings between like Baker and other attorneys at the FBI and Clinton attorneys? Gee, what do you think they talked? They must have talked about golf and grandchildren, like, you know, Bill and Loretta down there on the tarmac, don't you think? And by the way, they're meeting with some success. There's this one federal judge. There's this one federal judge who said, and his name, by the way, is Lamberth. Where is this quote? It's terrific. You know, I can't find the quote. Let me just summarize it for you. The quote is, "This is the most egregious breach of national security in American history," i.e. Hillary Clinton's emails and server, "and the most egregious breach of transparency with the American people in American history." This judge is not happy. So Judicial Watch is doing its usual yeoman's job of being a thorn in the side of the left and in getting documents which, you know, apparently the Republicans are either too timid or too stupid to get on their own. And you need to send them some dough, $10, $20, $50, whatever. They work strictly on donations. I mean, these guys rock. The website is www.judicialwatch.org. That's www.judicialwatch.org. JUDICIALwatch.org. Send them some dough. And now the next subject before we get to our final subject, which is our good friend Barry and who he really, really is. This Medicare for All nonsense that the Dems have been touting. The left is fond of telling us that this would solve the problem and drop the costs and everybody would have access to health care and blah, 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 blah. Look, we saw what happened with Obamacare. We saw Obama lie to us 29 times on TV. You can keep your doctor, you can keep your plan, you can keep your hospital, your rates are going to go down $2,500, blah, 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 blah. The lies are even more insidious this time. Let me tell you about some other single-payer nationalized systems that all the Democrats tout. I mean, whenever they talk about how great this idea is, they always bring up Sweden and Canada and the UK, etc. Let me give you some facts. I've often told you that having an insurance card is not healthcare if no doctor will take it, or there's not enough doctors to take it, or if the government, which is really what the Democrats want to do, they want a system like the UK's, where it's completely nationalized, and the decisions on care are made by a government panel. Having that card doesn't mean squat. Having a doctor means everything. In the United States, you will get care. Your care cannot be denied, unlike all the rest of these countries. You may have to pay for it. It may cause financial strain, but you can get a doctor if and when you need it, period. In these other countries, you cannot, period. Let me give you some examples. Canada and Sweden. They have the two worst wait times of any healthcare systems in the developed world. Roughly 10 times the wait times for procedures as the United States. 10x, which is why so many Canadians come here. The UK. The UK, which is a completely nationalized health system, which is what Medicare for All is, by the way. And socialists love it. I mean, it's control. You know, healthcare, the carrot of healthcare and having, you know, this free healthcare, never mind your taxes, this free healthcare and, you know, access for everybody and all this nonsense is, besides being nonsense, it's the promise to get you to give up your freedom. Just like immigration. This is not about all these poor people coming from South America and wherever, and we need to help them, and they're fleeing for their lives. No, it's about votes. It's about power. Just like gun control. It's not about safety. It's about control. And as I told you a few minutes ago, it's about being able to dismantle the rest of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution once the Second Amendment, that pesky Second Amendment, those pesky bitter clingers to their guns and religion are eliminated. In the UK, do you remember that deal, it was probably a year ago or so, that little kid, his name was Alfie, and his family wanted to take him out of the country for health care. First of all, the UK, the death panels in the UK said, no more care for the kid. He's terminal, he's done, goodbye. So the parents, the Pope, the same Pope, said, we'll give you free care. And I think there was a doctor in the United States who said he'd give him free care. And they wanted to take the kid out of the country to get free care. British court wouldn't let him take the kid out of the country. The kid died. But let me give you another example about the UK. There is no procedure in the UK that you would want that does not have to be approved by the government. It's not like Medicare here, as it currently exists, which is, you want a procedure, you can have it. The only thing you really wait for is how much of it is going to be paid for. Big difference. This is, you can't have the procedure if they say you can't have the procedure. And that's measured on your age and your worth to society. Gee, why do I think that the older you are and the more conservative you are, your worth to society is going to be viewed rather dimly by the American death panels? In the UK, let me give you one example of the UK. In the UK, cataract surgery. The waits for cataract surgery are amongst the longest in the world. And as you probably know, most people who need cataract surgery are older people. And in the UK, and this was exposed, and there were articles written on it by the United Kingdom Ophthalmologists Association, who is concerned about making sure people have eye care, not about government nonsense. And basically what these articles said was, because the UK health system has such limited resources, there's not enough to go around. And they are deliberately, the death panels are deliberately delaying approval for older patients for cataracts. And there's more than 2,000 older patients a year going blind permanently in the UK because the government has denied them the cataract surgery. The government's internal memos, this is no kidding now, is that they're denying them surgery because of their age, and they hope, I'm summarizing, they hope that they die before the surgery is needed, saving the state money that they can allocate to more productive members of society, and since it's subjective, perhaps more politically compliant members of society? I bet so. And that study, by the way, you can look it up online. Not study, but report. The Royal College of Ophthalmologists. The Royal College of Ophthalmologists. Look it up. National Health Service, Royal College of Ophthalmologists. You can read all about it. That's just one example. Now, I don't know about you, but I know that when I want access to a doctor, I want access to a doctor. And yes, if I can get part of it paid by this insurance company or that insurance company or Medicare or whatever deal I'm on, great. But on the other hand, if it's about going blind or about life or death or about losing a limb, you know, being in a lot of pain, I probably want to see a doctor. And if it's not going to be paid for in all or in part by whatever service I'm using, I'm still going to go see the doctor. That is not what you get to do in a nationalized healthcare system like these morons who are running for president on the Democratic side want to happen. Okay. By the way, Canada is the same. I don't know if you knew this or not. Canada can deny you the care. Number one, they keep you waiting 10 times longer for approval, no matter who you are, than you would in the United States. And then at the end of that long wait, they can say no. No, we don't have the money. No, we don't like you. No, you have no worth to society. No, you're too old. No, you're too conservative. Whatever. I'm not sure that's really what we are wanting. I thought that would be interesting for you. I thought that that cataract thing in the United Kingdom would like the perfect example. Which brings us to our last segment, our buddy Barry. Who is he really? And if you remember last week, I gave you, and by the way, if you didn't listen to last week's show, you should. You should. Because Barack Obama is not going away. And he and Eric Holder, his wingman, and a whole bunch of, and Valerie Jarrett, they are the spiders at the center of the progressive web. They're pushing all this redistricting in states. They're pushing the illegal immigration. They're pushing this. They're pushing back against the Trump administration wanting to put that question on the census form. They're pushing for illegal immigrants. Even if they don't vote now, they figure they'll vote later because it gives them more congressional seats. He's the spider at the center of the web. Last week, we talked about, since we can't get his school records, since there's conflicting, lots of conflicting evidence on where he was really born, including conflicting evidence offered by his grandmother and his brother, he has a Social Security number from Connecticut where he's never lived or been, except maybe on a campaign rally. We went on who he is associated with. I told you about Frank Marshall Davis, as I've told you about in other shows. A communist. Card-carrying member of the Communist Party. That was his mentor. George Soros, the most often visitor to the Obama White House. 88 times. 88 times. And we know about Soros, of course. And then we talked about, and by the way, Soros was, you know, rabid anti-Semite, you name it. Then we talked about Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn, you know, who blew things up and killed people and that kind of stuff and got off on a technicality. And he started his career in their living room when he was running for state senator in corrupt Chicago, Illinois. And Ayers has said himself that he wrote Obama's biography, Dreams from My Father. And we talked about Valerie Jarrett, born in Iran, his handler. His Muslim handler. And we talked about in previous shows, the show before that, all the Muslims, radical Muslims, not American Muslims, radical jihadi Muslims that he appointed to all sorts of positions in the White House, Homeland Security, you name it. Total infiltration. And we talked about, or we began to talk about Tony Rezko. So this morning, I'm going to finish up this part, and next week we're going to have part five. I'm also going to talk about next week what's happening with the tech giants. There was a New York Times article, let me digress for a moment, written by the guy who started Facebook with Paul Zuckerberg, 6,000-word New York Times editorial, you can look it up online this week, that said Facebook needs to be dismantled. It's too big, it's too powerful, it's all about power. And not about company profits. Zuckerberg is a power-hungry lefty. And this is his own partner saying the company needs to be broken up. Very interesting article. We're going to talk about all that next week because this is a clear and present danger to free speech and the 2020 elections and all elections thereafter if it's not handled. All right. Tony Rezko. Actually, you know, I think I'm going to start... I'm going to read you just a couple of excerpts from an article written by Michael Massey. He's black. He's a liberal. He's not a righty. He's a lefty. He has a talk show in Los Angeles, widely listened to. And he hates Barack and Michelle Obama. Can't stand them. This is a black liberal who hates Barack Obama. Let me read a few things for you. The truth is, I do not like the Obamas, what they represent, their ideology, and I certainly do not like his policies and legislation. I've made no secret of my contempt for the Obamas. As I responded to the person who asked me the aforementioned questions, somebody asked him, you know, why he didn't like Obama. I don't like them because they are committed to the fundamental change of our country into what can only be regarded as a communist state. I don't hate them per definition, but I condemn them because they are the worst kind of racialists. They are elitist-Leninist, with contempt for traditional America. They display disrespect for the sanctity of the office he holds, and for those who are willing to admit same, Michelle Obama's raw contempt for white America is transspicuous. I don't like them because they comport themselves as emperor and empress. Presidents are politicians, and all politicians are known and pretty much expected to manipulate the truth, if not outright lie. But even using that low standard, the Obamas have taken lies, dishonesty, deceit, mendacity, subterfuge, and obfuscation to new depths. They are verbally abusive to the citizenry, and they display an animus for civility. I do not like them because they both display bigotry overtly, as in the case of Harvard Law Professor Louis Gates, when he accused the Cambridge police of acting stupidly, and her code speak pursuant to not being able to be proud of America. I view that statement and that mindset as an insult to those who died to provide a country where a Kenyan, his illegal alien relatives, and his alleged progeny could come and not only live freely, but rise to the highest, most powerful position in the world. Let me stop there for a moment. What he's talking about there is an oft-repeated rumor that the kids, those two daughters, are not really Barack Obama's. That Barack Obama is really a homosexual. That Michelle Obama may be several things. That Michelle Obama may have had an affair with Louis Farrakhan. And that those kids may be actually Louis Farrakhan's. I have no evidence of this. I'm just telling you what the rumors are. As to his birthplace, which this guy is clearly alluding to, there is evidence that Barry Baby was not born in the United States and was not a United States citizen and was probably elected contrary to the set standards of the Constitution and was probably an illegitimate president. Now that, and I know some of you are rolling your eyes out there, that I do believe. People who could try and pull off Spygate, which was Barry Obama and Valerie Jarrett's brainchild, nobody else's. Comey and the rest were just lackeys doing the bidding. And, by the way, willingly, gleefully doing the bidding. If you can try and pull off a heist like that, and you go to great lengths to conceal any records that would prove that you were an American citizen. Nobody conceals something if they don't have a reason to conceal it. It may be as innocuous as, gee, I like my privacy, or it may be as malicious and insidious as, gee, I was a foreign, but this, by the way, is another thing that's come up by several very good investigative journalists. I was a foreign citizen and got foreign aid as a foreign U.S. student. Gee, that might be a good reason not to release my school records. Let me continue. Michelle Obama is free to hate and disparage whites because Americans of every description paid with their blood to ensure her right to do same. I have a saying that, quote, the only reason a person hides things is because they have something to hide, unquote. No president in history has spent millions of dollars to keep his records and his past sealed. I continue. He opposed rulings that protected women and children, that even Planned Parenthood did not seek to support. He is openly hostile to business and aggressively hostile to Israel. His wife treats being the First Lady as her personal American Express black card, obviously the most prestigious credit card in the world. I condemn them because as people suffering, losing their homes, their jobs, their retirements, he and his family are arrogantly showing off their life of entitlement as he goes about creating and fomenting class warfare. Dislike with them has nothing to do with the color of their skin. Remember, this guy is black. The writer is black. It has everything to do with their behavior, attitudes, and policies, and I have open scorn for their constantly playing the race card. I could go on, but let me conclude with this. I condemn in the strongest possible terms the media for refusing to investigate them, as they did President Bush and President Clinton, and for refusing to label them for what they truly are. There is no scenario known to man whereby a white president and his wife could ignore laws, flaunt their position, and lord over the people as these two are permitted out of fear for their color. And then the last quote from this lengthy article. As I wrote in the syndicated column titled Nero in the White House, you guys might want to look that up. It was a great article this guy wrote. Nero in the White House. Never in my life, inside or outside of politics, have I witnessed such dishonesty in a political leader. He is the most mendacious political figure I've ever witnessed. Even by the low standards of his presidential predecessors, is narcissistic, contumacious, arrogance is unequaled. Using Obama as the bar, Nero would have to be elevated to sainthood. That's from a black liberal, folks. Rather interesting. Let's talk about the next of Obama's buddies, Tony Resco. So Tony Resco, he's a Syrian American. I don't know if you knew that or not. Chicago-based slumlord. He's the one who arranged, and I reported on this long ago, this corrupt deal for Obama's home in Chicago. Resco, who, by the way, is serving a 10.5-year sentence for influence peddling, bribery, and other stuff, loaned the money to the Obamas and donated to their campaign organization and set them up in a mansion in Hyde Park. Gee, sounds above board to me. Obama's relationship with Resco goes back decades. Resco tried to hire Obama to work for his real estate company, Resmar, when he graduated, supposedly, from Harvard Law School. In 2008, Obama stated, I quote, "Resco was a friend that he had known for 20 years, unquote. The Chicago Sun-Times, hardly a right-leaning newspaper, estimated that Obama received $168,308 from Resco and his circle. In 2005, Resco did this house deal for Obama. Obama did not have the money at that time. Now think about this, folks. He did not have the money in 2005, but he was able to spend $1 billion on a presidential campaign in 2008, and he and Michelle are now worth hundreds of millions. Does anything about this kind of sound bad? Or is it my imagination? Resco made a deal with the owner of the house they wanted to buy. He bought the adjoining empty lot next to the house at above market price. And the Obamas made a below market price offer on the house. So in effect, the seller who was selling the lot and selling the house made the same amount of money, except Resco paid like double for the lot and Obamas paid half for the house. Huh. Anyway, there was one of Resco's buddies. I mean, this is quite the circle. Quite the circle of insects. One of Resco's buddies is Saddam Hussein's agent, an Iraqi by the name of Nadmi, that's Nadhmi Auchi, Auchi. I mean, you really can't make this stuff up. So Auchi, I'll call him, he's a business magnate, pretends to be a philanthropist. He's an honored citizen of many countries, you know, a globalist. And Auchi kind of made his name as an international financier and arms dealer for and of Saddam Hussein, of all people. Auchi was also an asset of British Foreign Intelligence Services, MI6. You know, like Christopher Steele, the dossier. You know, there's some kind of link here. We'll see if it comes out in all these investigations. Auchi and Tony Resco were partners in real estate and a pizza chain. Auchi was building influence, if you will, in Chicago at the time that Obama was bidding to rise as a state senator. Huge ties to the Middle East. And he was known as a conduit of Middle Eastern money into the United States. Gee, might this tie into Barry, Muslim, not having any money and then having a lot of money? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. Who knows? Pretty much Tony Resco and Auchi financed and guided Obama and Jarrett into the Oval Office. Auchi was also involved with the United Nations oil for food scandal, which had to do with Iraqi oil and food, and I won't go into the details right now. In 2004, Auchi was told by the United States he could no longer come to the United States, and that was because he scammed the Pentagon on a multi-billion dollar deal. To give you kind of an analogy, if Soros, one of Obama's good buddies, personifies the progressive wing of Obama's politics, Auchi personifies the wing of the Muslim Brotherhood, because Aki, yes, is a Muslim brother in the Muslim Brotherhood. I would love to know how many of the people that Barack Obama put in all sorts of positions of great responsibility and power in the United States government, not subject to any congressional review, just appointees, political appointees, who were Muslim Brotherhood folks, how many of them knew Aki? Maybe a payback to Aki for all the help he gave him? Who knows? Aki is a rabid anti-Semite, by the way. He led the support for the Turkish terror flotilla, which, by the way, was also financed by George Soros and was conducted by, if you listened to last week's show, Ayers and Dorn. Do you see how this circle is all connected? You know, with Barry at with Barry the spider at the center of the web. It's really kind of remarkable, I think. There was another person in low-cost housing, Valerie Jarrett. So Valerie Jarrett and Tony Resco and Aki and Soros basically ushered Obama to the presidency, folks. That's exactly what came down here. And by the way, all these people share another common trait, never mind globalists, leftists, anti-Semites, pro-Palestinian, Muslim Brotherhood. They share other violence. They share one other trait. They are masters at getting money out of a government. In other words, using a government to promote their own financial gain. Every single one of them. Aki, by the way, sues his critics. He does it all the time just to silence them. And has been known to be involved in, shall we say, mysterious disappearances of people who have questioned him. Yes, maybe he got along with Hillary Clinton in that regard. Let's go to the next acquaintance of Barack Obama. Not acquaintance, friend. Close friend, like the rest of these people I've told you about. Rashid Khalidi and Edward Said. So Rashid, that's K-H-L, the K-H-A-L-I-D-I, and Edward Said, S-A-I-D. Gee, they were also anti-Semites. Khalidi was an anti-Semitic professor, an historian of Palestine. Amazing. Khalidi is currently the Edward Said, you love this, the Edward Said Professor of Arab Studies at Columbia University. Gee, didn't Barry go to Columbia? Oh yeah, he did. The Obamas were very close friends with Khalidi and his wife, whose name was Mona. And they were also friends with Edward Said, who was Khalidi's mentor. Khalidi taught at the University of Beirut. And by the way, he routinely, during those years, spoke on behalf of Yasser Arafat's Palestinian Liberation Organization. Gee, I wonder what the influence was on all of Barry's hate Israel, interference elections, want Israel to go back to the 1967 borders, which is suicide, and send $100 million a year to Palestinian terror groups, and then armed ISIS. You know, Benghazi, Chris Stevens, arms deal, you name it. Gee, you think any of this might be linked? Imagine. When they were in Chicago, the Obamas regularly dined with the Khalidis. I mean, this was far more than just a, hey, I'll help you become president and you'll help me make money off the government and do stuff in the Mideast I want you to do deal. They were friends. In 1998, the Obamas attended a banquet and the featured speaker was Edward Said. Amazing. Said was a huge critic of the State of Israel, and he considered anything that they controlled after 1967, the 1967 war, as, quote, illegal military occupation, unquote. In the year 2000, the Khalidis held a fundraiser for Obama when he was running for Congress. And the Woods Foundation, where Obama was a director, imagine this, donated $40,000 to Mona Khalidi's charity. Could this be a quid pro quo? Here's what Khalidi said about Barack Obama when he was running for president in 2008. Quote, I am confident that Barack Obama is more sympathetic to the position of ending the occupation than either of the other candidates. Huh. You know, nobody becomes president of the United States without very high-powered connections, folks. I think we all kind of know that. You know, Trump was his own connection in a lot of ways, but he had folks that helped and supported him, too, and most of which the Democrats have tried to ruin. You know, just teach everybody a lesson. Obama, by the way, as I told you last week, was a community organizer for ACORN. Do you know who had a large role in creating the housing crisis, the housing collapse of 2008? You bet, ACORN. Because ACORN, through Maxine Waters, Barney Frank, and Ed Dodd out of Connecticut. Boy, Connecticut has some terrible senators, doesn't it? You know, Denong Dick and... Oh, yeah. Anyway, those are the people that basically reinforced the Community Reinvestment Act after Clinton did his deal with it, if you will. It was originated by Jimmy Carter. And these were the people who pushed for people who couldn't afford houses to be able to have houses, which resulted in subprime lending, which resulted in mortgage-backed securities, which resulted in the tranching of those securities into various credit groups, and the sale to foreign banks, which is what precipitated the global financial meltdown in 2008. And then, of course, Barack Obama comes to power, and in true Barack Obama form, he talks about how great he is getting us out of the hole that the outfit that he worked for, that the press didn't report on 20 years before, put us into. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. If you define Obama by his friends, folks, and I've given you some of his key friends here, all these friends are political and financial manipulators, fixers, corrupt businessmen, international criminals, card-carrying communists, FBI-identified enemies of the state, and terrorists, foreign and domestic, and academic apologists. Every single one of them. I think that kind of tells you who Barack Obama, our friend Barry, really is. Can't wait to bring you part 5 of Civilizational Jihad next week. What Barack Obama did surreptitiously behind the scenes to rob you of your freedoms and to infiltrate American culture with Muslim culture and Muslim bodies. I don't mean dead bodies. I mean live bodies. Take a look at Omar, the current congressional... I can't even believe she's a congresswoman. The current congresswoman from Minnesota's 5th Judicial District, who was elected because 90,000 plus or minus quote-unquote Somali refugees, unquote, all Muslim, were shipped there secretly after being given asylum by Barack Obama, turning that red district not only blue, but jihadi blue. That's all coming next week, along with some more on gun control, which we got to keep our eyes on, and a really, really important subject. I mean, a critical subject for free speech and the First Amendment, and that's these tech giants and what they're doing to stifle conservative speech and to promote liberal speech. They're doing it on both sides of the scale. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. You have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.